Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
This is Frank on Target, and you're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Cottageville, South Carolina. And this is True Crime in the Low Country with Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News, can be seen on X, and Jim Cask of Crime and Cask. And you can catch Jim on crimeandcask.com. Hey, guys, what's going on this morning or this afternoon or whenever this gets rebroadcast?
We got no reason to make an episode. There's nothing going on except, Jim, did you read the 132-page brief filed by Alex Murdaugh or by his attorneys on behalf of Alex Murdaugh? I think it was filed about right around December 12th.
Hey guys, can I interject a little humor? I'm going to inject a little humor.
Not allowed.
Oh, well, listen. The only way that Jim had have time to read that 132 pages is if he took that fenbendazole like you are and he spent that much time in the bathroom.
That is not funny. We don't discuss those kinds of bodily functions, period.
All right.
No, but let's just break it down. It's only 120 pages of text because part of it is the table of contents. So let's stop whining about that. So that's 10 pages a day. No, maybe it's a little less, a little bit more. Anyway, it's fascinating, Jim. It's powerful and it's explosive. And Fitz News's summary of it is totally off. They didn't read it. Because there's some explosive stuff in there, especially on page 56. But it's for the first time ever their summary of what they thought they proved at trial, which we've never had because Jim Griffin didn't even bother to mention it in his closing arguments. So it's powerful. And Toll inserted a line in her rendition of the transcript from her January 29th hearing. By the time she had the written order on April 11th of 2024, she had added a line that is not in the verbatim transcript. That is such a manipulation. That's falsifying a court document. I've always thought she was an incompetent, substandard jurist, and she most certainly is. I have absolutely no respect for her whatsoever. How is that kind of fraud any better than any fraud you accuse Alex Murdaugh of committing? Anyway, you got to read it. See, you cannot read a summary of it. Don't let AI summarize it. Read it, because your things are going to pop out to you. You've covered the story. You've covered the narrative, and you're going to say, Wow, this is simpler. It's the best summary ever of what the hell the case was about. I don't know where Dick Harpootlian got it, because he didn't actually, there wasn't that clarity at trial, but there is in this.
Well, I suspect I know where he got it. Have you been off the grid? Has Elaine been off? Did Elaine write it for him?
No, he got it from my first book called Defending Alex Murdaugh. That's not Jim. That was terrible. That is a roadmap.
That was
not true.
I'm sending Jim Griffin and Dick Harpootlian copyright infringement.
No, Jim, read it. You just admitted you hadn't read it. No, it kind of puts your book in a different context.
And by the way, that was shameless, Jim.
No, that was shameless.
Frank, you did it, Frank. You provoked him. You provoked him.
But I didn't do it. That's my job, you know. I'm the provoker. You know what I mean?
He just takes the stick and pokes the bear.
Yeah. Okay. But Jim, read it.
It's not his fault.
Yeah. You're not gonna. And then what I was kind of going through. I'm only on page 88. So we've got the Remmer is controlling, not State v. Green. Your analysis of that was not accurate. But anyway, but so the first half of the brief is about...
My analysis was always Remmer. You didn't read my book.
No, you were saying... Jim, stop. Okay, but anyway, but go back to... Okay, so what I was looking for is, did this brief include anything from the Myra Crosby book? And it does not, as far as I can tell. But it does include that Russell Lafitte's conviction was overturned. So it's current, and they had the opportunity to include data from that book, and they do not. And, you know, they had to consolidate the appeal from the trial and from that motion that was before Judge Toll into one brief, which is excellent. It's extraordinary. But he not only is he going to get the second trial, but I don't think the prosecution is going to try him, because when the financial crimes are not allowed, and they should never have been allowed, and, you know, I'm just reading this right now just before Frank called, where, you know, all that testimony with Tony Satterfield and old Boohoo, what a sympathetic figure he is, none of the Satterfield debacle was even known to Tony Satterfield or anybody till after the murder. It had no relevance to who killed Paul and Maggie. None, zero, nada. That testimony should never have been admitted at trial. And to admit that kind of highly prejudicial testimony about those financial crimes, it has to be, this is undisputed, the precedent is it must be directly related to the criminal act. And there's no relationship at all between those financial crimes and who killed Paul and Maggie. If Paul and Maggie had been about to testify about those financial crimes, if there had been evidence of that, which there is not, you could have said maybe it's relevant, but it's so prejudicial, it still doesn't pass. There's a two-prong test. It fails on both prongs. The state has no case. But this is an enormously well-written,
never had a case.
Succinct. Never did. No, they don't. Anyway, so it ends at, you know, there's 120 pages of the brief itself, and I'm on just right at about 90 pages, you know, page 88. And so I don't want to just gloss over it and say, oh, no, this is just like any other pleading. No, it's not. It's a seminal document that we ought to pay attention to. And the fact that media has ignored it speaks to they will not give up on the narrative that Alec is guilty. And they won't. That is their basis. That's the rock that they're going to die on, because they made so much money off it, because their credibility is tied to that. And they can't let go.
Yeah.
They can't acknowledge that their narrative is totally wrong, because it means that they are very mediocre reporters, that they were horrible at assessing evidence, that they rushed to judgment, that they stuck to a narrative that made no sense, that they monetized false narratives, and they did everything to mislead the public. And they're never going to admit any of that.
So
the seminal book hasn't been written yet, Jim, because this document has stuff in it that your books don't cover, should cover, could cover. I'd get to work right now and write a brand new book.
Like what?
Well, there's more. There's a better way to explain some of the details about the phone. Also, some of the conversation with Alec and Paul about the drug use and what he was doing and what promises he'd made to Paul and things like that, those got lost in the circus atmosphere of the trial. So.
The trial was a circus. I think there was bad reporting. I don't want to say bad reporting. They were all reporting the same dang thing. It was that Alex was guilty, 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 because they were doing it before the trial, so they had to keep that up after the trial and during the trial, which is why you have these fanatics out there who, you know, question me. Every time I come up with evidence that the prosecution has and I show how the evidence doesn't fit the narrative, people just come back, well, he's guilty. He did it. I'm like, wow. Okay, you're entitled to your opinion, but not your own facts. Come back to me with facts and evidence that disprove what I'm telling you based off of the
Jim,
I'll listen to you.
Jim.
Yeah, here we go.
No,
we don't try people on evidence anymore. We try them on. We try them on feelings. All right, and I'm going to tell you why.
Jim and I had we interviewed somebody, we're not going to name him, who knows a lot about Stephen Smith's death, and he should know better, and he should have been objective in looking at
I have proof that we don't try on evidence. I have proof that we don't try on evidence. Can anybody spell Derek Chauvin?
Yes, C-H-A.
All right, yeah, right. That's proof that we don't try on evidence, all right? And the same way, Alex Murdoch wasn't tried on evidence; he was tried on feelings.
I think in that 132-page document, should we call it something else besides the 132-page document? The brief, maybe.
It's his appeal. It's the appellant's brief.
Even though Myra Crosby, the juror 785, the egg lady. Even though she's not really mentioned in there, the heart of that appeal is the allegation of jury tamping by Becky Hill, who is the former court clerk.
No, read the appeal. Yeah. No, Jim.
Read the brief.
No, it's not. Read the brief first and then come back. That's why we should let's table this discussion until everybody here has read the brief. Because it's like arguing about quantum physics. I'm not an expert on it because I don't know anything about it. Let's let it go. But Myra Crosby is not at the heart of it at all. If anything, it's Boob Newman and Jewel. Those two, yes. Well, I've read it. I've read the brief.
I didn't think.
Okay, so it's the conduct.
Myra Crosby.
When you have a judge that inserts into the verbatim transcript of a trial a sentence and a legal argument that was not present at the, you know, that that motion for a new trial is a trial. She's the trial court in that reference. What she did is so unethical. So what Maya was talking about is extraneous. And also, once a new trial is granted.
No, it's not extraneous. It's not extraneous.
Yes, it is.
And no, it's not.
Yes,
it's a whole nother reason for a retrial. It's a whole nother reason
relevant.
For a retrial.
You guys,
aside from
it wasn't argued. It's not argued. So once a new trial is granted, it will not be it will be moot.
Oh, it'll be irrelevant. Yes, it'll be irrelevant
it's not argued in this. It's moot now because it's not argued because the defense didn't argue.
I didn't say by the
Nobody said. What I said was what 785 was another reason for a retrial because it was obvious jury tampering. All right, now you're the case.
Jury tampering means specific things, and in this instance, it means specific things. And so, what I'm saying is that nothing that she said was used by
apples and oranges.
An appellant brief has to be, it's very specific about what you can argue. You can't bring in new evidence that's not relevant. So, what makes jury tampering is very specifically defined by court precedent, and most compelling of all, or the controlling precedent, is United States Supreme Court precedent. So they have a very strong case, absent anything Myra is saying. They have a very strong case about jury tampering. But to go, it might be relevant at Becky Hill's criminal trial, and I think there should be a criminal trial. And I think that something else, Jim, that came up is why the state hasn't gone forward with charging Curtis Edward Smith. They addressed that in this appellant brief. So, I mean, there is a lot. You just asked me what's different, and I have right now 5 pages of what's different. I just don't want to go down this rabbit hole right now, but read the brief, and you'll come back and say, wow, so now we've got
some answers. They wrote in the brief that the evidence presented at the hearing was that 9 jurors testified they didn't hear Becky Hill comment on the merits of the case, but 3 jurors, Juror P, Juror X, and Juror Z, and the alternate juror, they testified, right, that Hill commented on the jury in Murdaugh's testimony in his own defense. Remember when he was going,
what's the point of, Jim, what's your point? See, you got facts. Your facts are right. They're not relevant. What's relevant is only one juror had to hear it. Only one. That's Supreme Court precedent. And it comes out of a case
right.
in Oregon.
I'm telling you that 3 did, and an alternate juror did. And Juror Z said that it affected her decision-making. And somehow Toll thought, well, that doesn't matter.
No, not somehow Toll thought that. No, it's very specific what Toll thought. Toll didn't know. See, there was pretrial hearings before that that January 29th hearing, and Toll had previously decided that there was no juror that would come forward to say, yes, I was persuaded by that. And so when Juror Z testifies, I was persuaded by that. Remember when Toll then said, well, I'm going to pull back your affidavit that says that you were persuaded by, you were influenced by the jury, and that's inconsistent with what you're saying right now, that you were influenced by Becky Hill. So what Toll did is she, and then later in the day, Juror Z tried to introduce a new affidavit because she wasn't allowed to come back into the court and clarify that both statements were true. What Toll tried to say is only one can be true. Your affidavit that you attached, that was attached to this motion for a second trial, either that's true where you say you're influenced by the jury, or what you're saying here in court right now, that you were influenced by Becky Hill, only one of those two things can be true. And I, Toll, have decided that it's your affidavit that's true, not your testimony in court. Okay, what's important for the in the context of an appeal is a judge can't make that kind of inquiry of a juror, period. So it doesn't matter what Myra said. It doesn't matter what anybody else said. It doesn't matter if there were 10, 3, 5, 2, or whatever. No judge can inquire about the state of mind of the juror. That kind of questioning is specifically barred, period. So that's the issue before an appellate court. So what I'm saying is your books are interesting. You've got good facts. But in the context of what's relevant in an appeal, it's not relevant. The rest of it isn't relevant. What is relevant is Justice Cole is barred from making those kinds of inquiries of that juror, period. And that's the grounds for appeal. That's one of the grounds for appeal. There are nine grounds for appeal.
Maybe you're not listening, because that's what I said was jury tampering. You keep bringing up Myra and Juror 785, and I never brought her up except in the context of a book or something. I'm talking about jury tampering by Rebecca Hill is really the meat, in my opinion, of that brief. Jury tampering.
You haven't read the brief, and that's exactly what I'm saying. So we are talking about the same thing.
Okay, let me take jury the word heart
is
out
interesting,
and say that it's a
it's
large portion of what they're talking about.
As far as the book. No, it's
wow.
Not. Wow,
let me tell you something. Hold on. You guys, right. Between the two ears,
we're going to agree to disagree.
You know, this is what do you call it? The entertainment value is not the facts of the case. Entertainment value is you guys going at each other. Now, this just gives me a great craving for Domino pizza.
Okay, Frank, I want to know who's laughing in the background. And I'm sorry,
can
I just
could we come
take
forward?
Say that again.
Has Christine Avery from Domino's Pizza sent the anonymous email? Has she come forward and wanted to do an interview with you?
No. No.
Why do you think that is, Jim?
I wish she would.
I thought we were very kind to her.
I still don't.
I don't think she likes us.
I mean, I don't
I'm
know
starting
why
to take
an attorney.
All right, come on. I'm going to make you laugh. The reason that she didn't come forward is because Jim scared the living poop out of her for some reason, and Elaine's association with Jim. So now, parallel to that, there was a conference at my house the other day with some people that were going to run for political office, and they wanted to go to somebody else and talk to them about their position on their running and all this stuff. And it came out that the person that was being interviewed said, oh, I don't have any hard feelings about Kimber, my wife, Lady Liberty, right? I don't have any hard feelings about her. It's that damn Frank. He's behind the scenes pulling all the strings. Oh, geez. I said, I was never so flattered in my whole life.
But
that's exactly what happened with Jim.
But Jim, you do have power. You do have power because you, unlike everybody else involved in this, have actually, you know, boots on the ground. You've gone and interviewed witnesses. So that when it comes to facts, not the law, but facts, you're excellent. And you beat all of them combined. You've actually been there. You've actually talked to them. Something else that's come up, Jim, that we've talked about privately but not publicly, Why does anybody at this point
want... This is family radio.
No, wait.
Oh, okay.
Why does anybody at this point want to protect somebody? Let's just say, hypothetically, there was somebody that appears to be connected to a criminal act that has gotten away with it. And you have raised questions about it. You've reported on mate reports and what's in the public domain and an interview you did with somebody and what that person said and what could be verified based on what he said. You've just simply reported facts and in a way that should be what journalists are doing. And all of a sudden, people suddenly want to protect somebody under the guise that he's being accused, and that triggers them to want to protect him when, up until your involvement, they had no interest in protecting him at all, and you haven't made one claim that hasn't already been made by this very group, basically, in print years ago, back right after the murders. They talked about this particular person. Boy, Frank, I see, you know, this morning when you were talking about, I'm trying to be vague enough, I'm trying to say this in a way that none of us get sued, basically. It's hard to do. But, Jim, you're sort of following my line of questioning, I can tell.
All right, here's a little interjection of humor. You ready?
Yeah.
Elaine, can you repeat the question?
Yes, let me give it a shot. Actually, sometimes I can't. That's scary. So, Jim, what's your take on why...
about the Nixon administration.
Yeah, I know. Listen, here's a key.
Here's a key.
For the lack of...
I was an appellate in the Nixon administration, and I wrote the brief.
It's not that confusing, Jim. You've got to follow the facts, but reading it is not that confusing. Okay, so listen. The question was this. Jim, do you have a take on why all of a sudden you're being attacked for simply reporting factually what happened, and the person that these people are sort of de facto protecting is credibly, well, he's been identified as a person of interest. So all of a sudden now they're kind of protecting him.
Not kind of.
By going after you.
Somebody is. Somebody is.
Question. So wasn't that vague? That was attractive. Okay, but anyway, what's your take on that? You're so evil that they have to attack you no matter what you say? Or I don't get it.
Because I am directly over the target, and it's in my sights, and they are sweating. That's why.
Somebody is instilling fear. And it's not you, Jim.
I think it's about power and money.
Yeah, it's about power and money, but they're instilling fear about me, fear and trying to discredit me because I'm standing right over the target. I have my foot on their throat, proverbial throat, and they're sweating because they know it, because they know that they are guilty of these crimes. And there's a conspiracy out there, and they all are subject to a whole lot if SLED ever gets off their you-know-what and tries to go investigate this thing, because the evidence is clearly sitting right there, right there.
You know, this really, come on, now this is really tongue-in-cheek humor. This is dark, dark, dark humor. We really need a real, impartial organization to investigate this, like the FBI.
We have one.
That was the humor. That was my punchline.
It's not funny. Listen, I got something better. The most impartial person we've had investigating it. Because, you see, what I do when I'm reading the court document isn't what Jim does when he goes out there and investigates it. They are two very different things. And you wouldn't get to the point where you have the court document if somebody like... Jim isn't out there actually investigating it. So I totally give Jim props and credit for what he's done. But let's see. Jim has done more than the FBI. Yeah. If we want an independent person investigating this, we already have it. Jim Kaska has investigated this. Whether it's his investigation is what's at the heart of this brief or not, his investigation is definitely at the heart of understanding what actually was going on all across the board. This appellate brief does not discuss Stephen Smith. It does not discuss the connections between the Boat Brats and Stephen Smith, and you know, there's a bigger picture here that Jim has locked onto, and that is incredible and amazing. So my distinction is that it's, you know, Myra isn't at the heart of this appellate brief, but jury tampering is part of, overwhelmingly, is part of this bigger picture of what happened going back to July 8th of 2015, basically. And so, but Jim, why is it not being looked at from a broader perspective, from that overall overarching...
In my opinion, yeah. Because if that would involve investigating Becky Hill for jury tampering on a criminal basis, and if they do that, then their argument for Alec Murdoch not having his jury tampered with is blown out of the water, which means he gets a new trial. And if they put, they are not going to move an inch towards anything that gives him any advantage towards getting a new trial.
Right. And that's cutting up their nose to spite their face. It really is. Get on the second trial. They should be concerned about justice. What?
But I will throw this out there. If the South Carolina Supreme Court grants him a new trial, meaning it takes that decision making out of state's hands, then the state is now open and free to go investigate, because what they've been trying to protect, in my opinion, is now gone. So therefore, now we're going to go after all the characters that are involved in this, because they're not going to have egg looking on their face, so they've got somebody to go blame. They're going to go after everybody, which includes these people who I have over the target, and Becky Hill, and her son, and all of these people.
Absolutely.
Once the Supreme Court gives him a new trial, they are all going down. And it's going to be fast. I guarantee you Sled already knows all about this. All they have to do is take the digital footprints and now put them together, and they've got cases, and they're going to start lining them up. They're going to have to have somebody to blame. It's not going to be themselves, I guarantee you that.
Okay, but that's what serves the public. They should be doing that right now. They could actually not file. I don't even know what their response is going to be to this, because they don't have legal reasoning to respond to. You know, at the trial court level, they can respond to a motion any way they please.
They're going to dig up some old law from, like, you know.
They have it. They can't. They're limited to what they've already argued.
1795.
You can't just.
95.
It doesn't matter. 1795 might be relevant if it's on point. It's not the age of the precedent, but they cannot expand beyond what arguments they've already made. An appeal isn't about generating new evidence. It's about looking at what's the record. So they're not going to do that. But what they should be doing right now is saying, look, upon review and with the hindsight of, I don't know what, the booze wore off, we finally woke up, the public furor, that hysteria has died down, and we now, with fresh eyes, say, holy cow, what did we do? And we're not going to oppose this. He is entitled to a second trial. We admit it. This is something, an argument that is not made in the brief, but certainly is something that the public will make, is, look, of course Becky Hill was corrupt, and she corrupted and tainted the trial, and she effectively denied Alec his due process right to a fair trial by a jury, and to have the evidence presented to the jury in a court of law where he has a chance to rebut it. Okay, so they don't have a comeback to that. They can't suddenly fabricate one. There isn't one. And with what Toll did by altering the record by the time she gets around to the written order is indefensible. So the state doesn't have a leg to stand on here. Their best option right now would be to say, we do not oppose this motion for a new trial anymore. And go forward that way. And then let's go ahead.
That'll never happen. Expect a continuance, a 30-day continuance in probably about 3 weeks.
A continuance is a continuance. They're sloppy, they're lazy, whatever. I think that a continuance will not work in their favor, because you're going to have a new Department of Justice. You're going to have totally different characters. They might want to salvage something from this by saying, we didn't wait for somebody else to point out to the public.
Hey guys, hold the palm of your hand up to the phone so I can read your palms. All right? I'm going to tell you when this is all going to come into culmination. All right? I can give you a season of the year. All right? This will all get straightened out in the fall, probably after Labor Day of 2026, prior to the 2026 election. And do you know why? Do you know why? I'll tell you why. Because Henry McMaster's term will end. Attorney General Alan Wilson will be running for the state, for the governor's seat. He is going to clean this all up. He's going to clean the whole damn thing up, and that's going to be his October surprise, and he's going to win the election of governorship of South Carolina.
Alan Wilson?
Okay, Frank, I got to ask you just a second, because I know what Jim is. I'm going to save Jim the uncomfortable feeling of having to ask you, so I'll ask you. Are you saying that McMaster had more control over this prosecution?
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is Henry McMaster is not going to run for another term. Alan Wilson is going to be elected governor of South Carolina. But he needs some kind of sensational achievement to put him over the line.
Well, he's got it.
Well, wait till you see what he does with
Frank,
this Murdoch thing.
Frank, I think that this is more, you know how it was not in Trump's best interest to claim credit for those vaccines? Once it finally sunk in that, hey, that's probably not the best idea, he backed away from claiming credit for those vaccines. I think that Alan Wilson is going to be in the same situation with his trial. He's going to want to say...
he's going to want it to go away?
He's going to want to distance himself from the conduct of the prosecution in the first trial. You bet. 100%. Yes.
I don't know how he does. He sat at that table every day.
Yeah, that's my feelings exactly.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.